Welcome back to the second episode of Quiver the Green Arrow podcast. I am one of your hosts, Michael Cohen, and with me is...
Amanda Konkin. Hi, it's nice to see you again, hear you again.
So we're back for our second episode. True to our motto that we are the best, least professional podcast, we're already late with our second episode. We didn't actually record the first episode and had to re-record it. And now we're a few days late with the second episode. But regardless of that, you guys seem to be enjoying us talking about a television show that just started. So
it's great.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. All the people who have started following us on Facebook, the ridiculous number of downloads.
Awesome. Thank you.
For 1 week and just being right out of the gate. And we've already got comments on the website and an email to read. But before we get into that, I just wanted to note that Arrow, in its series premiere last week, was the highest ratings that the CW has seen since, was it 2009 or 2006?
Well, I thought it was 2009 because I'm pretty sure Vampire Diaries was one of the last times they had a really high rating. And that has only been around for a couple years. So,
but in any case, it's kind of proof that this show is the successor to Smallville.
Oh, yeah.
That Smallville was their flagship show for the longest time, even back when it was the WB, which sort of took that title over from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which had been kind of the main show until it went over to...
UPN, right? Yeah, yeah. And then they became... Isn't that what happened? WB and UPN became CW? Isn't that something?
I think so.
Who knows?
I think
so all the awesome got rolled into one big thing. Yeah, that exactly. Is CW, so
yeah, it's kind of... it's great. This show's continuing in the lineage of
many great shows.
Of, as we saw in this episode, in the second episode, cheesy, romantic, but awesome genre TV shows.
I know, it's good.
The ice cream is just like... we're watching and we're just like, oh... it's Smallville.
It's an interlude moment. Yeah. I don't know. In the second episode. I don't know. Yeah. Anyways. As always, you hopefully have watched the episode before you're listening to this podcast. We do talk about it before it happens. So,
spoiler-tastic. Yeah.
Get ready to watch it again with us, talking about all the awesome stuff. And someone talked about spoilers. I think there was a comment on our Facebook page where I like to say that we don't really have a lot of spoilers. We have a lot of conjecture. And I feel like you can't really have one without the others. So
that's a really good point. Anything that we're saying, it might be based on knowledge from the comics. But as you're gonna hear in this in our listener email, that you guys know more about the comics than we do. Anything that we come up with, anything that we say might happen this season, we don't have any knowledge, like advanced knowledge of anything. We don't know what's gonna happen any more than you do. But we are gonna make our best guesses. Yeah. That's pretty much how we watch TV. That's so. Great.
Unless, of course, we see Stephen Amell without a shirt on, I will go and take pictures, and then I will share it with everybody that this is actually what happened.
You're keeping your eyes open for
I know, it's great. They're not disappointing with the shirtless Stephen Amell. I love it. It's good.
Awesome. Cool. Well, let's get to that email. And this email is from Brandon Frisch. I hope I'm pronouncing your last name right. And he says, "Hey, guys, just listened to your first episode today and really enjoyed it. Just wanted to comment on a few things. First, Tommy Merlin seems to be named after Green Arrow's archenemy Merlin, which makes me immediately suspicious of him. He may become a villain for our hero if he isn't already." So that kind of confirms what we were already thinking.
And I'm excited by that, and I have a deeper appreciation for that character, and feel kind of dumb that we didn't Google that before we watched the
episode. Secondly, I believe the name John Diggle is a nod to author Andy Diggle, who wrote Green Arrow Year One, an origin story wherein Ollie is marooned on an island and becomes Green Arrow for the first time. So obviously deeply influenced by that. I don't know how much that Year One storyline and the storyline in the TV show is reflective of the original Green Arrow storyline.
But it's still nice to see that they're sort of keeping into account of that.
The Year One story by Andy Diggle is a really well-known Green Arrow story. Excellent. So, that's good. So yeah, it's nice to see that some stuff's coming from that. So He goes on to say, furthermore, in year one, Oliver Queen is betrayed by his trusted bodyguard, which makes me wonder where John Diggle's true loyalties lie. He seems like an okay guy, but he's on Mrs. Queen's payroll, so I guess only time will tell. And I feel like we kind of got an answer to this in this episode.
I think we did too.
Mm-hmm. But it could be tricky, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, maybe we're taking it at face value, or we're not looking deep enough, or we're looking too deep. Like,
yeah, no, it really...
It's because the show's so new, it's hard to tell. Yeah. Because if it's Supernatural,
yeah.
I think, like, you take Supernatural at face value for the most part, right? Like there's not a lot of, like deep, insidious storytelling.
Well, you're
going to
get
on.
A lot of hate mail for that.
No, I'm not saying that it's bad. I love Supernatural, but Supernatural is very much like you get what you see.
So it's
very much on the surface. Not that the character stories aren't deep.
No, but it's
the
just
plot
like, yeah.
lines aren't deep.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Like the threads tend to be very like, here's a bad guy. We got to do everything that we can to figure out how to defeat the bad guy, and then we have to beat him, right?
That's true. You don't have to have a lot of that sort of misdirect, whereas something like this, I feel like maybe it's letting the audience go, like, here's the obvious bad guy. We're fighting him in this episode. For those of you that want to think a little bit further about that, here's two characters that are doing interesting things, and you can figure them out yourselves.
Yeah, which is what Smallville was really good at, right?
Yeah.
Smallville had that through line from first episode of, Clark Kent and Lex Luthor are best friends? This doesn't make any sense. How are they going to become... arch nemesis and Lionel Luthor's machinations and all of that crazy stuff and the secrets about Krypton
and Tess bringing Tess as
there were all these threads that we had to keep track of and it's difficult to tell with only two episodes, is this show going to be more like Smallville or more like Supernatural or more like Vampire Diaries, which I think is probably even shallower than Supernatural.
Hey, there was just a vampire who took the body of another vampire and pretended to be that. It was deep. I don't know. It's
anyway, like, to continue, Brandon's email here. He says, on a lighter note, I enjoyed the discussion about how Green Arrow in his early days was a blatant ripoff of Batman.
Yes.
You mentioned the Arrow Cave and the Arrow Car, but you forgot to but you didn't mention my favorite, the Arrow Signal, which is obviously just like a bat signal.
That's awesome.
Wait, I
think they'd be confusing. It's just like a big arrow in the sky. And they're like, where's the potty at? It's like, wait, no.
It's just a big, just pointing at something.
Which, yeah, okay.
And then he says, finally, I was wondering about the boat and its passengers. Ollie, his father, Laurel's sister, and the other man in the raft make four. But I thought I heard one of the news reports say there were five people aboard. I was wondering who the fifth might be and if he or she might be significant. Any thoughts? Anyway, love the show and keep up the good work. That's from Brandon. So we actually just we went back before we started recording and double-checked what the news reports did say. And they said that there were seven people confirmed dead and Oliver makes eight people on the boat. So that means that we have accounted for the whereabouts of four of them.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of this second episode, perhaps a fifth or maybe somebody who was already on the island.
Yeah.
We don't know just yet, but there were other people on the boat and we don't know what happened to them. We only know about four characters, right? One of which seemed pretty inconsequential and is somewhere at the bottom of the ocean now. With a bullet hole in him. So
you know what I'm hoping the show does? Because that actor is like an actor that you'd seen around on other things. Like, he's not just a day player, I don't think. Like, the one that got shot in the head. I just recognize him from something. I don't know what. So, like, it's quite possible that they could bring him back later. And maybe, like, he could be involved in other things. I just don't want to... I feel like the show might have the foresight to really acknowledge all of the things it's putting in there. So recognizing that it's saying seven people, recognizing that the boat was sabotaged, we need to know how that happened. Was it people on the boat that then got like paid to disappear, or like how did that actually work? So I feel like it's just interesting to, because the guy that got shot in the head was in an earlier scene with the dad. He wasn't just a random guy that got saved.
Yeah.
Like, we saw him in the hallway have some sort of interchange. So, like, he was some sort of character. And I like the fact that we're flashing back and discovering all this stuff about the island. There's a lot to play with there. So I hope they use it. They might not. And that would be one of those surface level kind of things where they're like, this was a dispendable character. But then you really can think, it's like, wait, was he an expendable character?
Yeah.
So it's good.
Yeah.
That being said...
Cool. So we're going to start up the second episode. What's the episode titled here?
Honor Thy Father.
Honor Thy Father. So
right? That was the whole thing about it.
Yeah.
Which really, when we're talking about Batman stuff, it was this was the episode where you really got that idea of like the split personalities and being a little bit of a playboy. And oh, I have to correct myself. I kept saying philanthropist last podcast. I meant philanderer, and I felt really dumb. Like afterwards, I was like, no, two different things. But philanderer is what I was going for. Yes.
So we open up this episode with Oliver flashing back to the island and preparing to go beat the snot out of some bad guys in the book.
Awesome, awesome outfit. Which I feel like maybe they use this exact same shot later in this film when he's getting his costume on again. I feel like it's a very similar shot.
Yeah. Like they just flipped the shot. I think we're gonna, like many things in these CW shows, can get used to seeing the same thing repeated over and over again in every episode.
Yeah, those wide shots of things that you're really like, that was used earlier. Yeah. But I really like this shot. So talking about the costume, because they do like put it on and you finally get to see him sort of being Arrow. I kind of like the hood, like the half hood thing that's coming down his eyes, because it hides that atrocious mask makeup that we were talking about last episode. Yeah. So I guess they're doing a bit here. And
apparently, actually, the makeup smear is straight from the origin of the character.
Nice.
Like the original comics.
Cool.
And that's the first time he's Green Arrow. That's what he does, is he smears makeup across his face.
Well, there you go. Then look at them. I really enjoy that, honoring the source material, which is great. So you had this good setup where we were talking a little bit that like everything that's happened in the first 5 minutes really could have been in the like pilot episode, right? Like the stuff that he's talking about is really setting up stuff that...
So just in case you missed the first episode.
Yeah, it's like, here is this character.
Just to catch you up.
Like, without the tropes, this is what the show would be, I think, without the tropes of flashbacks and things like that. You really start with this idea that he is this Green Arrow character, and they're really diving right into this new life and all that stuff. So, it's good.
So, we're getting a little bit of backstory on the fact that they declared him dead without
And that awful Kardashian joke.
Yeah, the terrible Kardashian joke. And we get one of Tommy Merlin's only real appearances. He only shows up twice in this episode.
He does. They're really... Sorry, now that I know that he was like an old... Like, that he's going to be an archenemy or they can set him up for that I'm really sort of worried that they're just sort of like... not going to utilize him properly.
Yeah.
And I'm really worried because the way that it makes it painful and the reason we love Lex Luthor so much, he was a real character in those first three seasons.
Yeah.
Like, they really, you knew who he was. And even the season I hate with him and Lana, you really, like, he's still a character that you're invested in.
Yeah.
Whereas right now, they're not doing that with Merlin for me now. They're sending him in, giving these, like, vapid lines, and it's sort of frustrating.
This episode kind of nailed it that we care about Ollie, we care about Dinah to a certain degree, Laurel, as they keep calling her. We enjoy Diggle, but he's not necessarily important yet. By far, Detective Lance is the one that's standing out on the show.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So,
and I think this episode,
we've got the court scene where they declare him not dead anymore, which is an important part. And while he's in there sort of expressing how difficult it was to be on the island, we get some flashbacks of exactly what he was going through. And everybody seems really, it's funny when there's no sound and you're just seeing everybody's expressions.
Like so,
everybody's really dour and very upset looking.
Yeah. Sometimes I don't like this, that they try really hard in, like, when he's in public places, that he, like, really is this, like, I'm thinking and so solemn about it. It's like he would do a better job of hiding that if he really, like, was going to. And it feels a bit forced that they're like, we're like, yeah, we get it. We get that he's understanding all this stuff, but he's also in a courtroom and he needs to be putting on a certain...
But I think one of the points of this episode was that he's still trying to figure that out. He's trying to figure out who he's supposed to be as his public persona.
Yeah, that's true.
And by the end of the episode, I think that we see what we're going to see more of.
Yeah.
And we saw a little bit of it last week, but we also saw a little bit of this serious Oliver persona.
He's slowly starting to get this dichotomy more, and I think Stephen Amell too is becoming more comfortable in this role as well, which is nice. And that awkward interchange in the hallway would mean Laurel and and Ollie, and you know, Merlin's little, hey.
Yeah, yeah.
Super awkward in the side. And anyways, I'm excited they still have these characters that they're keeping, like Laurel's sidekick. I forget what her name was.
I don't know that we've gotten her name.
Really?
I'm sure it's not important, but I don't have it written down on the cast list.
But I'm impressed because sometimes they throw in these characters in pilots and then they don't carry them through. But I guess they're making her sort of a rounded, like having her own life. That actually, in this episode, I feel like they really had this dynamic between Ollie's sort of storyline and Laurel's storyline. Yes. And you get her with her dad and her like law life. I think that that's something that they're trying to do, this ensemble thing right now, so that they're not maybe putting all this burden on the Oliver Queen storyline.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure if that's a good thing yet, or perhaps deterring away from his character development.
I'm a little bit worried that it's going to be procedural, and if they do it every week where her cases sync up with who he's hunting, that's gonna get a little bit tired.
Yeah,
and hopefully like their paths cross in that respect on a regular basis, but not in every episode, because otherwise it's just way too procedural. Sure.
I'm impressed they shut down like Robson Street for this scene.
Yeah, and the courthouse. Well, the old courthouse, which is now the museum,
the art gallery.
Art gallery.
It's good. Those steps where there's lots of buskers all the time. It's good. So it's good. They're still using the city in this episode. So it's not just the pilot that they were in Vancouver. I'm liking that we still see this Vancouver through line. But you were pointing out as we were watching it, they're doing a really good job of not showing us Vancouver, of really making it its own thing, which, you know, other shows that are shot here may not do that so well. Yeah. But
other shows have had a tendency to just sort of let you know that they're shot in Vancouver. Yeah. And this one's doing a really good job of using locations that we're familiar with, but not showing us exactly where they are.
And I think that has to do with the tone of how the show is shot. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to really like that in this episode, with the exception of one scene where her hair sort of goes in front of the camera. But I think that they really have established the tone of the show and how it's going to be shot. And they're doing a really good job of, oh, Stephen Amell climbing a rope without a shirt on. We'll just pause for that for a moment. But they're doing a really good job of showing us that the show has a style and that they know exactly what they're doing with it, which is great. Yeah. And you're seeing this book. I really started to appreciate they did a lot of close-ups of his books with all the names in it this time around. And they really like the details in this show. So we're talking about, too, he's doing a lot of shirtless scenes, which I may sort of mock upon, but they have him in scars and full makeup each time they do this, which is just a great detail to the show to really show that people are like invested and that they know their character and
I wonder how many of the tattoos that he has are real tattoos, are his tattoos, because more than likely most of them are makeup appliances along with the scars and everything. So we've got this bad guy. I don't remember his name. Do you remember his name?
Adams. I have no idea. That was the last one.
So
Martin Summers. Summers. Yeah. Sorry.
He's in league with the triads.
Right.
And the Chinese triads were specifically told. And
not triads, triad. It's like a thing, the triad.
Okay. Laurel is trying to prove that he had
killed Victor.
Had someone's father killed. And Arrow has his own reasons for going after Summers.
Yeah.
And we're going to see that those two things kind of sync up towards the end. And maybe these two are going to find a way to work together on some of these cases.
But you were pointing out, too, like, this first thing, like, barging in there and tracking Summers down, it's really no holds barred, like, really with how he's approaching these villains and, like, just knocking them out, or I don't know if he knocked them out or killed them or whatever he's doing. He's really being aggressive, and that's still part of the through line of his character. I really hope they don't lose that, because they are, like we said, we point out there's this lovely ice cream scene that's going to come up in a little bit, and they're doing this lighter side of the character. I really hope they don't shy away from what makes Green Arrow Green Arrow, and that is this idea of, like, he's a really complex character with his idea of justice and being able to shoot people in the face and be like, nope, you had your chance, and this is justice, and I'm gonna carry it out. So
well, and with some of these guys, like if he knocked them out, that's fine. But if he actually was like shooting to kill, those guys weren't doing anything.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that they're bad guys, but they weren't actually like they weren't actively doing anything like attacking anybody.
Yeah.
So for him to be attacking them, to be taking that initiative, he is a vigilante. Whereas we hear that word thrown around when it comes to superheroes a lot of the time. But really, like in Smallville, Superman was not a vigilante as much as he was just out there defending people.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? He wasn't looking for trouble.
And that's part of, I feel like that's instinctive or inherent in arrow, like using a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
That's not a defensive weapon.
No.
That's an offensive weapon, yeah. Right? Like you really have to know, I mean, you can use it in a fight as we're seeing that he can shoot it and use it really well, right? But this idea that... It really, you need to know where you're targeting and you need to plan it out and have a certain amount of arrows. So it's just this really, it's intrinsic to his character. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so they're setting up this Diggle and Ollie really nicely, which is kind of good,
I think, in this episode. Yeah, well, and we kind of got a little bit of a mention that he is on Mrs. Queen's payroll.
Yeah.
And that she wants to make sure that Oliver is safe. But I just to go back to the email from Brandon, I don't think that there's anything untoward going on.
No, and he also says this. He's like, if you disappear on me one more time, you won't have to fire me. So this idea that he actually like cares about his job, I think is above this. And the idea that she's like, I don't care, I'm paying you. And he's like, well, it's my job to protect him, not to... So it's good. Oh, and then you have this sort of conversation between him and...
Yeah, and we were talking about this when we were watching it the first time, and I'm not convinced that Thea's character is all that worthwhile at this point. It just seems like she's in there to add some extra conflict.
Yeah, and to have this deep conflict.
It's just so surface of like, look, you can't tell me what to do because you were missing for 5 years. Yeah. And I'm really upset about that still, so I'm going to go do some drugs and drink a lot.
Yeah.
And be an irresponsible teenager. And it's like, that's not...
Yeah.
She is her character from the OC. She's the exact same character.
Yeah.
Which is kind of obnoxious.
She's doing what she's supposed to do, and I guess it's like a nice sort of... It gives him that responsibility role, because he doesn't have that elsewhere, and I think that'll be the only relationship that he has where he really takes that role on. So if they ever need to play that sort of aspect, I think that's where it'll come in.
Yeah.
So... Now, we were talking earlier about how we love Laurel's father, so we've got Detective Lance here, who I love. But it also amps up this idea of, like, the procedural aspect, that you really, the half of the show that's procedural is really Laurel and him.
Yeah.
But I'm really loving him. Like, I could see him totally, I would watch CSI Star City, like, I like him. And but it also, it's this line that they've got to be careful with. And with him as a character actor, like, they don't just blow that on... procedural stuff like this interchange with the bad guy here where they are on him for like a whole 12 seconds and he just scoffs, like that's what it is. It's like he doesn't say anything and it's beautiful. They just held that for a while to just like, he's obviously good enough actor that like this is a good 30 second chunk where nobody said anything and it was just the reactions between these two characters, and I just think that was
great. I think in all of these shows you have to have one or two characters that really ground it and sort of amp up the performance of everybody else involved. Yeah. And I really think that it's Blackthorne's his last name. I'm getting better at this. Paul Blackthorne, who plays Quentin Lance, is that character on this show.
Oh yeah.
He's definitely having everybody else step their game up in the scenes that they share with him. And his performance is just awesome, making him one of the standout characters so far on the show.
And I wish they were doing a little bit more with, I don't know, his mother seems really one-dimensional, and if they're putting her up as like, I don't know, I don't even know what to say about it. I don't think
she's going to be around for much longer than the first season.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think that she's going to be
expendable character.
Complication that you kill off.
There you go.
In the first season, right? He'll have to step up and sort of take control of the company, which is what this episode's about a little bit, because right now we're in the scene where they're in the Queen Industries tower and Oliver's mother and Walter are trying to say, you know, you need to step up and be the man that your father was. And he's like, oh, look, that's not who I am. I can't do that. Which is interesting because I've never really thought of Oliver Queen as a reluctant, like tycoon type character.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
And I never really felt that way about Batman either.
Right.
Until some of the modern stuff.
Yeah,
because, like, if you watch the Tim Burton Batman, he has no problem being Bruce Wayne.
No, no, no.
It's not until you get into sort of the newer stuff that there's this idea that they have this persona where they just want to be seen as a rich boy.
Yeah. I don't know why that is, too, like, why it's necessary. It's the one thing that bothered me about this episode, like, this idea that they're really, and I feel it's a consequence of the modern Batman and how popular that is, like, the Bruce Nolan version or whatever, is this idea that, like, you have to have this sort of two alternate personalities because the world is stupid, and if they see you as only one thing, they're never going to suspect you as the other.
Yeah, it's this, like, it's this trying to get away from the conceit that a secret identity is a secret identity and trying to get out ahead of the fanboys and the nerds who are, and I mean nerds in the most respectful way possible, but just like those people who are so into it that they're going like, how does so-and-so not realize that so-and-so is so-and-so? The whole idea that Lois Lane should know that Clark Kent and Superman are the same person because she's met both of them face to face. So they have, like, because that's really where it starts, is with that character.
Christopher Reeve does it so well.
But prior to the movie, prior to Christopher Reeves being Superman and Clark Kent, that didn't exist.
Right.
Prior to that, he was a mild mannered reporter. He wasn't a meek and mild reporter, right?
Okay,
so they changed it and they sort of added this other level to the performance of Clark Kent there.
But, well, no, I guess there's like a lot of sort of surface stuff that's like above the deeper in this. Like, we're just talking about sort of split personalities, and you get him on the island going after his dad being eaten by seagulls, and you really get this sort of little like lost Abercrombie and Fitch boy going like, dad is getting eaten by seagulls and I'm on an island and I'm vomiting and I don't know what to do. Yeah. I really sort of like this idea that you really are, we've just missed the growth in his character. Yeah. And I think that that's what this first season is going to be about, is to be like, where, like, who is this new person? Like, how did he become who he is? Because we started with him and now we're going back and we're like, why is he pretending to drink and all this stuff? I'm like maybe he's just reverting back to that because this growth that he had in the 5 years on the island, he can't just be right now. Like, you really sort of get, it's just a great with the dad.
It's almost like and it's really difficult, I'm sure, for Stephen Amell to embody this, but it's almost like we're coming into a character in the fifth season.
Because
he's had 5 years on the island, and that's the story, that the origin story that we would normally start with in another story, right? So his character has developed through all of these trials and tribulations, so he's simultaneously having to go back, play that, and then come forward and play the current Oliver Queen.
Yeah, that's true.
And then play this facade character that's somewhere in between the two of like, I've been through something traumatic, but I have to act like I always acted so that nobody asks more of me than I'm willing to give.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's good. And this episode too, so you've got more of this is the father-daughter stuff. So this is the first thing where he's like really protecting her with the cops and all that, which is interesting. Again, more of that storyline. Sorry, every time he's on screen, I like to point him out. I think he's doing such a great job.
But it's a little bit, I don't know if cliche is necessarily the right phrase for it, because I don't think that we see this a lot in shows, but when there is a cop and a daughter who's somehow related to law, you get this thing of like, look, I'm just doing what I saw you do, and you are out there protecting the city, I'm protecting the city in my own way. And it's like, okay, we get it, you guys. You don't need to say everything out loud.
Okay, I'm glad that you just brought this up, because it just made me think about the double dynamics in this show, and I'm such an idiot. I was going to say, you're talking about cliches. We have two giant cliches here, right? Yep. The idea of how she's honoring her father doing her job, and how he's honoring his father by doing what he wanted but not. And there are these two sort of deeper storylines, but they're all very surface the way that they're presented to us in this sort of package of this show called Arrow, that's a mainstream sort of television show on the CW. And I feel like the show is grappling with these two different ideas. Yeah. The idea that it has to be this marketable thing where we get it, he's becoming the superhero, but he says it twice in the show, and I don't think it was necessary, where he's really like apologizing to his dad for having to be this playboy and dishonor his memory by trying to honor it. And I feel like that's just sort of dumbing down the audience a little bit to be like, you don't understand the aspects of this episode. And I'm like, well, no, we do get it. Like, we're strong enough to understand that, like, it's a struggle for him to sort of dishonor his father's memory by trying to honor it.
Yeah.
But it's good. I'm glad you pointed that out, because it really made me realize that that is why it's such a focused episode on both of them, is this idea of, like, also, how are they honoring their fathers.
There's an aspect of, like, you learn in film school and in any storytelling, show, don't tell, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And what they're doing is they're showing us, so we're seeing it, we're understanding it, and then they're telling us
as well.
So it's sort of this redundancy that's going on, and it's also, it feels a little bit rushed. They're not giving it room to breathe. They're not letting it be its own story.
Yeah,
they're trying to push forward and go, look, we're establishing all this stuff so that we can bring in Deathstroke next week.
Yeah,
and we can bring in Huntress the week after that.
Right, yeah.
And we can bring in all these other DC characters and all these things so that you can get the sense that it's a larger world. And it's like, you know what? Let's just... One of the great things that Smallville did is that in that first two seasons, it let the characters breathe and live in their own world before we started to... I mean, it was like season 3 or 4.
Before you got a really heavy... Flash
And then we started bringing in all these other characters one by one until the point where you were like, look, he's in a much larger world.
Well... That's a consequence, too, I think, about, like media being more aware, because before that, I think people didn't really know who the Flash was, right? Like, this idea that, like, Superman was allowed in Smallville, was allowed to exist in Smallville, because we didn't have the, like, mass sort of superhero hype that we do now, where we know about these characters. So now I feel like maybe it's a consequence of the audience that they're like, no, we're going to stay relevant. We're going to give you characters you know, otherwise you're not going to care about the show. And it's like, no, not necessarily, right? Like, if you, right now, they've thrown in, right? It kind of makes me upset. We've got Merlin already in the first episode, Laurel Lance, and Speedy. Like, all of those in the first episode, right off the bat.
And the Deathstroke.
And Deathstroke mask. Like, and then in this one... at the end, we have him getting shot by what I want to conjecture as, like, Dark Archer or something that's really, like, there's another person coming in already, and it's the second episode. So it's really, I feel like perhaps that's going to be a hindrance to the program, so.
Just so we're, not to get too ahead of ourselves, but you said Dark Archer.
Sorry, well, not,
which is the end of the episode, but I just want to say, I don't know that that necessarily actually happened. So we'll talk about that more when we get there, but I just want to throw that out there. So right now we've got Thea in her bright pink pants.
I love those pants. I was watching that. I was like,
her bright pink skinny jeans. trying to have a serious conversation with Oliver, and I just can't take her seriously in bright pink skinny jeans.
She's wearing nude colors on top. It's fine.
And she's trying to tell him, like, yeah, I know that the island was hell, but what was going on here was hell, too. And it's like, you know what? In your huge mansion and with servants and all these great things, I'm sure that it was traumatic and it was difficult to deal with.
I feel like we're just,
father,
like, harping on that character, because she's just really grating on us right now.
She's so obnoxious right now. Where, like, it just... She needs to have something more than just this petulant teenager.
Yeah, because that's the thing, is that Speedy was like a troubled, like, person, and he was picking out the greatness in her. Whereas here he, like, sort of assumes that she is, like, he's like a father figure to her right off the bat, instead of this idea of, like, nurturing that relationship, which really is sort of already putting me off that storyline. Like, I almost don't want that to come. Oh, look, it's the ice cream scene. With Laurel.
Here we go. We're going to take a side detour to Smallville.
What is this? Is this Act 3? Is this sort of like the lull in the...
Yeah.
Like, you got all the setup in Act 2, and then you've got Act 3 where it's... I'm going to sit and talk a little bit about my relationship with your sister. Anyways, you were talking about her before. I think it's Ariana or... Hoffman was the original... Was the Black Canary in Smallville?
Yeah.
How she really looks like her.
They look
and it
very
really,
similar.
Yeah, it is kind of throwing me off now that I... Like, every time I watch her, she's got sort of the same...
It's a little bit weird. Structure. It's a little bit weird that they cast it that way.
Yeah.
And, it's... You know what? It's weird from the get-go that they decided that they were going to do a Green Arrow show, and they didn't just continue the characters from Smallville. And I understand why they didn't. I understand that they needed to get away from Smallville and start a new, something new, and you know, not have to pay some of those actors so much money. But I really feel like we had an awesome, well-developed world and some actors who are really comfortable in their characters. And to sort of be starting over, it's a little bit odd, but at the same time, it's understandable. And we'll get there eventually, after we've had some time with all of the actors and everything. But, I don't know. Scenes like this just make me go, I don't know. They want to distance themselves from Smallville and the Vampire Diaries and Supernatural, but at the same time, they throw in a scene like this that just takes you right back there.
It's contrary to his character, though, which is the thing that bothers me the most in this.
Yeah.
Okay, if you're going to come back and defend your father's honor, then yeah, you need to cut ties with Laurel, right?
Yeah.
Like, this idea that, no, it's like, I want to enjoy ice cream and I don't want to hurt her and blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, this scene is just negating everything. If they keep flip-flopping like this, I'm going to get so angry.
Yeah.
It's like, we get that they had a relationship before and that he confides in her, but he's not allowed to confide in her if he's actually going to go ahead and do what he wants to do. Like, I get that they had to get her here so that they could have, like, a big, like, he protects her when she gets shot
That's the thing, is that I think
it's a plot device.
Our biggest problem with this scene is that this is a really contrived story. He's only there so that when the assassins show up, he can beat the snot
out of the guys and throw
a kitchen knife in.
Yeah.
And we get some other plot points that we're going to need later on. So,
yeah.
What I think they tried to turn into a character moment.
Yeah.
Is just detracting from the character far away from everything else that we're getting from Oliver.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult to reconcile those two things when you're saying that he's a loner and that nobody understands what's going on with him.
Yeah.
And then he's walking in and saying, I just want to have some ice cream with you and then tell you all of my deep, dark secrets. And it's not even one of those things where I felt like he was about to confess everything to her. And then they get interrupted.
No.
They were just
having a conversation.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah, they were just genuinely having a conversation. And that's the part that really, it was like, but like there was
where
other
was
ways
tension?
That you could really have, it was just sort of this sort of blasé moment, which is, anyways, and here's Diggle coming in and shooting around and
being pretty awesome.
He is so awesome.
He's got some nice moves here.
Yeah.
But whoever this white-haired chick is supposed to be, I'm sure that she's supposed to be a character of some sort.
Oh, she is. They mentioned there was a fan picture of it. We posted it on the Facebook
wall. China White.
Yeah, I was going to say.
China White.
This
is the problem with DC, is there's so many characters.
I know.
It's like you can't possibly know all of them.
Yeah, it's true. Oh, see, and then he's all like, are you okay? And she, like, ran into his arms.
And she's all, I don't like how she's weak.
No, I don't like that at all.
Like,
she's being protected by everybody, and that she just ran into his arms. Like, instead of, like, composing yourself, getting a lay of the situation, the first thing you did was run into his arms, being like, Ollie! And he's, like, patting her hair and covering her face. I was like, just, if you were, like, I don't know, I feel like if she could have stood, I don't know.
It's a step backwards, in my opinion, because, all the female characters on Supernatural, really strong female characters.
Oh, yeah. Even though that show is, you know, two guys. But everybody they
but
bring
the women,
in holds
the
their
women
own.
That pop in
yeah.
are oftentimes tougher than some of the guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is one way to go with it. And then Smallville, the women, either you had his mother, you had Martha, who was very maternal and very female and feminine, but a strong individual.
Yeah.
And so a very healthy role model.
Yeah.
Or you had Chloe, who had like the spunkiness and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And she'd get into scraps, and she'd be scared, but she'd do the right things.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, sort of have this
very
inner
different.
Strength.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that it's like, I'm not talking about like a weakness or like she just should have fought or something, but just like this, like an internal strength or like a depth to character.
She sees
That's
her father and instead of running to him and saying dad, she says daddy.
Yeah.
Which is just, that's just weak writing in my opinion for a female character. And I think right now the biggest thing on this show is that there's a lot of supporting cast and a lot of them are women and those women aren't being
utilized as much as they could be utilized.
Like they could be really interesting characters and I like what they're doing with Laurel.
Yeah.
But they need to, just like a lot of the things that we're talking about tonight, they need to follow through with all of this stuff.
Yeah.
They can't keep going back and forth. Either she's a strong, feisty lawyer who is going to eventually become Black Canary, or she's a weak damsel in distress. She can't be both, and she can't go back and forth.
Yeah. It's not about weak and damsel in distress are not necessarily the same thing as well. In terms of talking about language, if you're like if that's like a character type about being saved, it's a different personality type, and if it's well-rounded, that can be fine. Yeah. But you can't wishy-wash between two different things and expect us to have some sort of semblance of character. Yeah. Like, I don't care what kind of a character she is, she just needs to be consistent in her character, and that will be a strength in itself, right? Like, she can play a really vital role in the show being the damsel in distress, right? Like, you can have a character that plays a really a really good purpose and that we connect with in that,
Lana
right?
was fine for the first three seasons until she got magic powers.
Yeah, well,
But, you know, like, the beginning of the series, she was a great character even though she was constantly in peril.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and, like, the same with Chloe. But, it feels like a character who's supposed to be... It's that we know is going to become a superhero.
Yeah,
as well.
It's just really
we need to be establishing some of that stuff right now.
Yeah,
and it's going to be an evolution to get her there. But
which is a small thing. I'm just harping on this idea that you said, the idea of her running up and saying "daddy" instead of "dad." It doesn't make her any less needing to be protected by her dad to call him dad,
exactly.
Right? Like, it doesn't make her any less of like a daughter in distress in that moment to say dad as opposed to daddy.
Or to
like,
just run to him.
Yeah.
Right?
To just
and there's
be,
nothing wrong
right.
with that character moment to show that
it's
they're
great.
Tight.
Yeah. And that she does need protected. She just went through something.
But it sort of hammers this weakness of of her character that we saw right
which is just
the commercial.
The reason it's a contrast is because then the next scene you get between them
is a confrontation
where she's like, "I'm strong. I learned it from you," and all this stuff. It's like, well, then you would act differently in other situations.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I get
exactly.
it. Like, you just have... Anyways, I don't know.
And you know what? We're only in the second episode, and maybe we're being a little bit harsh on
the show
right off
the bat. We are, but...
And they'll get there.
Yeah.
I really feel like they're going to get there, and the show's going to grow into these characters, and that the writers need to get as comfortable with the characters as we want to be.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
That's true.
Because I think one of the things is that we come off of some of these other genre shows that have been running for so long, and we want to come into this new one and just be there already.
Right,
right?
And we just
want it to get to that awesome point that some of these shows get to. And we need to be a little bit more patient. We need to let the characters develop.
Yeah.
We need to let the crew and the cast develop these relationships a little bit more. And the characters will all come together. And I think we're going to get a lot of that opportunity with Arrow. I don't think it's going anywhere.
I hope not.
So,
I don't think it is.
I think we're going to have this around for a while. So,
that's good.
We just need to start allowing them to get comfortable with the characters so that we can.
Well, and there's just a small thing. So they're running through the docks or wherever they are now. And I love this where in his, like, badass arrow shooting and all this stuff, the one moment that really stuck up for me is he shoots this guy on the stairs and he goes down. He's like, oh, like down the stairs. Where it's like, it's trying to be like, look, we're in a realistic situation, but not really because we're shooting with arrows and guns. And anyways, great use of the set. They're really, really using their locations.
Yeah.
And I know it's just, sorry, like a weird thing to point out, but I'm really impressed with them for doing that and really being like, I don't know, they're all very beautiful, and again, I'm so glad that they're shooting it here. I think that there's a lot of potential in the city, and I think
Vancouver just has such great talent aside from like on screen talent, all of the behind the camera stuff.
Yeah,
we have some amazing like DPs and camera crews and just everybody that puts these shows together, because you look, it's the same city that they shoot Fringe and Supernatural, and they shot Smallville here, and so many shows, and
Stargate,
and they managed to find characters
within the city,
and the locations in all of these shows.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So and they've definitely found a character for Vancouver to portray.
Yeah.
In Arrow as Starling City.
Right. Yeah.
And. It's nice to see that, because some shows will come to Vancouver, some movies will come to Vancouver, and they'll just shoot Vancouver, and then they'll tell you that it's New York, or they'll tell you that it's Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
and it just we know. Everybody yeah. knows. Like yeah. it's the biggest thing that I'll go. We're in the middle of a big fight scene between Arrow and China White.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing I'll always go back to is Rumble in the Bronx with Jackie Chan. They're supposed to. It's Rumble in the Bronx.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where they've killed a guy and they're throwing him in the river. In what's supposed to be like the East River or something like that. And in the background, you can just see the Coast Mountains.
And
you can see like the Lion's Gate. And you're like, there are no mountains in Manhattan. Thanks.
Yeah.
but, you know, so this yeah. show is managing to keep
find a character
that stuff out of
and
out
that
of it.
That's why Vancouver's so good with sci-fi, right? Is you have this yeah. idea of making it a character and understanding that it can be.
Yeah.
When here you got the standoff between Detective Lance and Green
yeah,
Arrow.
Yeah, this is the first confrontation.
It
I
is,
think.
Yeah.
So
and you really have
moment.
This. I feel like even though he doesn't do anything, you really sort of see Ollie assess things. Like you know he knows what he's gonna do
yeah.
and all that, but it really like he's just given a moment to
yeah.
that for them both to be there.
I also like the aspect of Detective Lance where he's kind of. Got an axe to grind with the vigilante, as they're calling him
yeah.
currently. And
he's
telling everybody, like, all right, we got to take this guy down. We got to deal
yeah.
with him. But you can tell that he's kind of actually, if anything,
yeah.
he's upset about it because he wishes that he could do
yeah,
what
yeah.
Arrow's doing.
Yeah.
But he, as he says at the end of the episode, or earlier in the episode, that the vigilante is... You know, you can still accomplish these things while working
inside the
law.
Yeah.
So it's like this begrudging thing where he's like, I
yeah.
really wish that I had the ability to just nail these guys to the wall like
yeah.
this vigilante does.
Yeah.
But
I need to, yeah.
You know, like my code dictates that
yeah.
I have to work within the law.
Yeah.
So it's this thing of where I think he wants to let him do what he's doing, but he's breaking the law.
Oh, yeah.
It's this
yeah.
ethical
oh, yeah.
Battle that's going on inside the character.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love... Okay, so it bothers me that her hair has changed in this episode, like, near the end, and it makes me wonder if this was part of the third episode, perhaps, and they added it on to the end of this episode, because it's very, very rare that you would see, without it being acknowledged, like, the fact that her hair changes in an episode.
Yeah.
Like, that... Like, it can change from episode to episode.
But we're also outside, and it's an overcast day.
No, I checked her hair in the last one. Her hair was... brunette. She
yeah.
now has blonde streaks at the bottom of her hair.
Yeah.
And the reason I point it out is because you do have a very different Ollie here. Like, and
yeah.
and the idea that you got a narration where he was like, I need to be the person my mom thought I was gonna, or my dad, I have to dishonor my dad, like I have to be the person that my mom is afraid I am. And then you have it like cut to him being the person his mom thinks he is. And at the end of the episode, you have to go, I'm sorry, dad, for being the person that I have to be. So like it's
yeah.
it's the only reason why I kind of flagged that in terms of a like the way that they sort of structured this end part to be really like, let's hammer it down your throat three times. It just really sort of makes me curious as to the structure of the episode.
Yeah.
So it's just a red flag for me. I don't know, because I think they're doing a really good job with consistency elsewhere. But again, maybe it's the lighting and her hair.
I think it might be the natural lighting. It's difficult to match some stuff, and some stuff comes out. Because this lighting is a little bit harsher than anything else we've seen, because the show tends to be pretty dark.
Yeah, that's true.
Just
well,
visually dark.
When
so.
They're outside, not so much. Maybe it's because it's like supposed to be sunny, but it's rainy really, and they're trying to compensate with the lighting.
No, it's a perfect day for shooting.
Good.
Overcast
yeah,
is always the best because you get that nice, even lighting. But this show's very contrasty. So,
yeah.
And all the other times we've been outside, with the exception of a couple of moments, it's either been bright sunshine or night.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? And this is the first time I think we're really seeing like an overcast really evenly.
Other
than on
let's
the
talk
island.
More about our film experience.
The island is always very like,
dark and gross and yeah.
Well, no, I was gonna say it's always very like it's gritty,
but it's
very it's blown out.
Yeah.
So it's almost more on the harsh side of the
right.
lighting than that is.
Yeah.
So
that's
yeah.
good. Well, they know how to use their lighting in this show. They do. I like the greens, by the way. I was going to point out they have that nice green marble floor in the Queen Industries building.
Mm.
And I just think it's very interesting, like, the way that they're playing with color palettes as well in the
Isn't
show.
Isn't it a little bit odd that the Queen Industries logo is blue, though? Like,
oh.
I didn't like that logo.
Yeah,
it just didn't... it didn't say anything to me. And I mean, like, that's my personal thing a graphic designer. I'm gonna care about, like, the logo. You know, the fake graphic design in the shows. Yeah. This one thing that Smallville did so well was that they had, like, the LexCorp logo and the LuthorCorp logos were distinct but similar.
Right.
The Smallville town sign was great, and like they all these things. And when the Daily Planet came in and all that stuff, so you would think that such a major player like Queen Industries that we're gonna see over and over, that they would have put a little bit more time into. But I'm sure we'll see a redesign on it at some point.
See, her hair does have highlights in this scene too. Maybe it was just the lighting and outside.
So weird. So in that confrontation with Detective Lance, and in all of the stuff that we were kind of talking over with him, beating the snot out of Summers and getting the information out of him that they needed, that he did in fact order a hit on the guy
the Victor guy, that the
Laurel,
dad.
Yeah, that Laurel has been trying to prosecute him for the murder of. He gets that. The Arrow gets the confession out of him, and then essentially passes it on to Detective Lance in the form of, like, a throwing dart. With a little, like, digital recorder on it.
Which the detective knew automatically where the play button was. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. He's like, interesting. Oh, I'm going to play this.
And now we're seeing that they managed to convict him based on this evidence, which was produced under duress, which means that it's inadmissible. And they have no idea where it came from, which also makes it suspect.
Okay.
And any lawyer worth their salt could have gotten them out of that.
Yeah, but I will point out the difference. She is a civil suit lawyer, and it went now into the hands of the DA. So that's actually what it accomplished. Because the daughter was suing Summers because she couldn't actually have him convicted for something.
Yeah.
So now it's... So I sort of... Yeah, well, they're sort of skirting around those borders. Yeah. It's at least sort of...
But this isn't a legal show, so it's I don't expect that stuff to be 100% accurate.
It's true.
Now, this was a really odd choice with the island stuff to do this. And you were saying that you remember seeing it from the first episode, but I think I would have remembered this. This stuff that kind of goes...
Handycam?
It's not even that it's handycam. It's like consumer-level handycam. Like, it looks like something that we would go
It's
out
the wind,
shoot.
Though. They're trying to make it really, like... I feel like
it's
other scenes on the island, he was running or moving, right? There was movement
of
some kind.
But it goes to this weird video quality where it doesn't... It's no longer looking like this nice, crisp, clean, well-shot... Because obviously, I'm almost positive they shoot the entire show on digital. Everything's on digital nowadays.
Okay, so it's like...
So I would imagine that they're shooting on HD digital for all of this stuff, but they make it look filmic, right?
Right.
They give it that quality where it, much like Supernatural, which I think is the best shot show on TV
right now.
And nobody gives it credit for that. But this is a close second right now with some of these scenes just having such great color timing and just perfect visual aspects. And then they do that weird thing on the island now, just in those couple of scenes, of this weird, like, grainy video. But not all of it, only some of it. And it just kind of bugs me a little
weird.
Bit. But we got another awkward, evil mom scene.
Yeah, and setting up a symbol now, and you're like, oh, look at this plot device that I care about so
That's
much.
That's the Veritas logo.
Yeah, I know, I was going to say, it's going to be something, can't hurt us. So there's this overall plot that's happening in between
the cult of the squiggly lines.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Whatever that
and
is.
Then you have, this just bothers me, he just had a monologue.
Yeah.
Over top of him getting ready as the Green Arrow, that's the exact same monologue that he... Sorry, I keep harping on that. But again, it's this idea, like, we get it. You call the episode Honor Thy Father.
Yeah.
Like, ugh, it's good. I mean, it's... I get the sort of the stuff as well, but it also, again, you have the people in the background, the guys holding shovels. I'm sure that they can't hear what you're saying to your dad. Like, it just is an inconsistency of, like, ugh.
Yeah, but I think I hope what they're doing is they're trying to get all of this stuff dealt with up front.
Yeah.
So that later on in the season we can just sort of deal with the plot.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And the characteristics points are all established in the first three or four episodes. Mm-hmm. Like I said, they're rushing it a little bit, but
they are. This is a brilliant moment. That moment with Diggle and him in the car.
Yeah.
Will you be going out tonight, sir? And the way he responds, he says definitely, but he says it seriously, right? Yeah. So he knows that Diggle sort of, like, I feel like that's an exchange where, like, yeah, he gets that Diggle is not stupid and that he's like, and that Diggle, I feel like that was Diggle's way of being like, I get what you're doing. Yeah. So I think that was really nice. Yeah. It was a really nice moment without them having to sort of
I don't think that he's necessarily onto the fact that he's the vigilante.
No, I don't, but I think that he knows that there's something else.
But yeah, he does realize that what Oliver is doing is he's trying to put distance between himself and everybody else with this persona that he's walking around with. And so we just saw that last scene, and somebody who looks like the Dark Archer.
Yeah, it just looks like it, right? Yeah. It was someone with an arrow, right? He's getting shot on the island with an arrow with some guy in a dark hood.
Yeah.
So
now, see, what I think that is, either it's somebody from the boat, or it's a split personality issue.
As you say that, as soon as you started to go, I was like,
he's said a lot that he was alone on the island, and I feel like for them to keep hammering that in, and then to discover that no, he wasn't alone on the island, I think would be very odd. And now we've seen the Deathstroke mask, so obviously he wasn't completely alone the entire time. But this guy who looks like he does at the beginning of the first episode in sort of like the scruffy archer costume, I don't know, for him to be showing up so soon after he gets to the island, he's just buried his father. It seems a little bit odd to me. It just seems a little bit... There's something a little bit off. So whether or not that guy was already on the island, and now he's who he's going to learn all of his archery skills from or something like that, I don't know. Or if this is some sort of like a personal trial that he's putting himself through. Like some sort of a mental break that he's having in order to deal with... Because it comes at a very specific weird moment.
Time. Yeah, he just put the final rock on his dad's
and then he shot through the chest with an arrow.
Yeah,
this guy had plenty of time to do this previous to it, and it seemed almost like he was messing with him, right? Like this Dark Archer, as we'll call him until we have something else to call him, is toying with him because he's sort of off in the distance and he sort of pulls out, shoots him, and then he's kind of darting away. So there's this almost a mischievous aspect to it, which makes me think that it's something more than just somebody.
Well, because it makes no sense why some dude on an island would shoot, right? Like that, it just makes no sense.
Yeah.
In terms, I really like what you're thinking about this. So. But that would be remember we're talking about layers in this show.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be the top layer.
Yes.
And then you've got the middle layer, and then you've got what probably actually happens. Yeah. So, like, I really, again, the show hasn't proven to me one way or another yet how it's treating its audience.
Yeah.
And that's really something that, again, I guess we're struggling through these first few episodes, is like, really, what are you giving us?
Yeah.
And so it's
interesting. Well, because we just want to know what the identity of the show is, right?
Yeah,
So, and then we can gauge our expectations.
Yes, appropriately, yes.
And that's not to say that they... Because I'm going to go back to Supernatural and say, and I don't mean any of this against Supernatural ever, because I love Supernatural. Yeah. I watch it every week and I enjoy it every week. But it's in its eighth season. DVD. So it's in its eighth season and it's still a freak of the week show. But I don't care. It's not like with Smallville where the Freak of the Week thing got a little bit much.
Yeah, because,
And we're getting a little bit of the Freak of the Week feeling with Arrow, with its crime boss of the week.
Yeah,
How many crime bosses are in Starling City?
Yeah.
But at some point, I feel like he's going to have to start going after like underlings to get to the big, to a big ultimate goal.
The big
instead of just... you know, constantly taking out these top level guys and nobody seeming to notice.
Yeah.
Although, I think Deathstroke's either this coming week or the week after.
He's really soon.
So I think the bad guys are gonna take notice of this vigilante and they're gonna send somebody in to deal with them. But
we didn't confirm that wasn't actually a spoiler that we knew about, but that you genuinely like saw Deathstroke mask and then like we saw that there was a, which was kind of cool.
Well,
like,
at New York Comic Con over the weekend, we got the first official picture of Deathstroke on the show.
Cool.
And I think that because we saw the mask, we know that he's coming.
Yeah.
Of course we know that he's coming.
Yeah.
It being one of Green Arrow's main villains of recent years, I don't think that that's how he started. I don't think that Deathstroke came from the Green Arrow comics. I could be wrong. You guys can go ahead and email it at quiverpodcast.com and let us know if you know better than we do, but I don't think that's where that character originates.
But it
makes sense for them to be together, right? Because he's a marksman, and so is Deathstroke, right? He's a master assassin. So putting these characters together kind of makes sense for me. But he's coming soon.
Well, you're getting this idea. I like that you said the word assassin, because that's not something I think about when I think about Green Arrow, but you really, if you're pitting assassins against a guy that kills people, it's like, what is that line, right? This idea of like, is he assassin? Like, what is that difference between like, if an assassin is the bad guy in Green Arrow, then what does that make Green Arrow, right? Like this idea, and I keep calling him Green Arrow, we not have established him as Green Arrow,
I refer to him as Arrow and so far they only call him the vigilante. But I have heard in some interviews and stuff like that, I've heard them, the cast and stuff, refer to him. Well, no, they refer to him as Arrow.
I
think that they're specifically leaving the green part out of it, and maybe we'll get that eventually. Maybe it's kind of a...
rebranding.
A vigilante to the blur, to the red... Or the red, blue blur to the blur to Superman.
Right? Yeah, that's true. That's true, sure.
So sort of that, those stepping stones into the
add legend. The green. It's good.
Or maybe they're I feel like they're just leaving the green off, which because they've done it in the title for the show.
Yeah,
and it's not like the title of Arrow is particularly clever.
No,
it's Green just Arrow. What it is. Just taking away the green. So.
Well, and I think that that's perhaps this idea again. They're playing with that idea of like it's sort of a corny character, but they're trying to take the corn out of it by taking the green out of it. It's interesting. But they're playing with it.
I was saying to you earlier before we started recording that the Green Arrow has always kind of been a little bit cheesy.
Yeah.
And I feel like when he's written well, that's embraced.
Right. Yeah. Right?
The mustache and like the
vampire,
and the Robin Hood get up and everything. The punching bag, the arrow, you're like, it's all kind of part of the history of the character, and it feels like they're trying to wipe all of that away, much in the same way that Tim Burton tried to wipe away all of the Adam West Super Friends
stuff
from Batman. And for Batman that works, because he's sort of this dark, twisted character. He's really pretty insane, and he uses this symbol of the bat to strike fear into
the hearts of his enemies.
Yeah, those who would do evil, right? Yeah. So for that character, I feel like it works. But for Green Arrow, I feel like it's a bit of a stretch, and it's a little bit contrived to say that this guy who's running around and using arrows as his method of
killing people.
Yeah, it's there's a weird old-fashioned sense to it.
Yeah.
And that's something that in the comic books they've always embraced, and they've always had this sense of, when he's hanging out with other superheroes, they'll be like, so you're sticking with the arrow thing? The whole shtick of whatever. And it's like, and he'll make a comment of like, yeah, well, I've upgraded since the boxing glove days or whatever, right? Like, it's always that reference back to the boxing glove and to his, and like his net arrows and all these different things that he has. But at the end of the day, the character always has that core of the fact that he uses arrows,
which,
right? And as cool as a bow and arrow it seems to be right now, with Hawkeye and Hunger Games and Merida from Brave. It's very in right now. The main character on Revolution carries a bow.
Is that Billy Burke, though? Because I love him and he can carry a bow.
No, the girl.
I haven't watched it yet. Okay.
Because that's all...
what you do when there's no electricity.
Yeah. But it's just very cool and trendy right now to run around
with the
bow and arrow. Which I don't have a problem with. It is cool. A bow and arrow is cool.
But I'm going to flag this right now.
Yep.
I fear that they're trying to use the Green Arrow as Batman because that sells. And that's the one thing that I'm really, really scared of with this idea. They're like, no, we're doing Green Arrow. Look at all these characters we gave you from the Green Arrow. Yeah. But we're going to have these characters not actually do anything with them and just give you a show that's Batman, but not Batman.
Yeah.
Because we don't. So that is when I keep talking and harking on these character ideas and developing these characters, is that's really my fear, is that they're just using it to, like, this idea that is selling right now. It's trendy. It's like trendy Batman.
It's a really flawed way of thinking that I think Hollywood has right now with superheroes, which is that certain superheroes sell and certain superheroes don't. And there's something that anybody who's read a lot of comic books will tell you. There's no such thing as a bad superhero. It's just all about who's writing them, who's drawing the comic, where the storytelling is coming from. Because you can have an absolutely terrible Batman story, and you can have an awesome Batman story. You can have lame Superman stories, and you can have amazing, uplifting Superman stories. Okay. And the Green Arrow is no different. I'm going to check out the Year One by Andy Diggle. I'm going to pick it up and read it, because obviously it is something that we should have already read prior to getting into all this. But I'm going to read that to get a little bit more depth on that character. One story that I have read for Green Arrow that I loved was written by Kevin Smith, and the podcast is kind of named after that storyline, which was titled Quiver. It was Green Arrow's return I think he'd been killed.
He came back.
To life, and it was never really explained, or maybe it was explained later, but it wasn't explained in those comics just how he came back.
Right.
Might have had something to do with Hal Jordan being the Spectre at the time. Those of you who are reading comics know exactly what I'm talking about. But that story is an excellent story, and everybody should check it out, because it's an example of a character who some people consider corny or lame being used in a really interesting way. And I believe that's when they first introduced the female Speedy. A bunch of other things that are currently aspects of the character of Oliver Queen and Green Arrow. So that's something that I highly recommend. And just to go back to my point about superheroes, is that like these characters take on lives of their own, and it's up to the writers to come in and to sort of fulfill the promise of that character. And I do worry about exactly what you worry about, which is that they're trying to make the Green Arrow into Batman so that they can have a Batman TV show on, because the Christopher Nolan trilogy is done. So they need to continue that legacy of a dark superhero with no superpowers, but all these gadgets and stuff like that. And I'm happy that so far they haven't shown a ton of gadgets when it comes to his arrows.
Yeah.
Most of the time he's just shooting straight up arrows.
Yeah.
He has some very specific ones that are utilized for certain
purposes. I will say he's used 2 gadget arrows per episode so far.
Well, but he's used this kind of the same one twice. That digital recorder one looks an awful similar, lot like the USB digital download one.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
So I think that's his all-purpose
digital one.
Yeah, it's like his iPod or his iPhone of arrows that can do a million different things. And he's used the zip line one, right?
Yeah.
But I like that it's not that we're not focusing on the gadgetiness of his arrows,
right?
And that the fact that he uses the arrows has it's more to do, we've talked a lot about it, with his sort of ruthlessness and his sort of zero tolerance on crime, which is making that character really interesting, because that is an aspect that's been explored with Green Arrow that is different from Batman.
Because
Batman is very much of the, like, I will beat the snot out of you, I'll break your limbs, so maybe I'll leave you eating out of a straw for the next 6 months, but I will not kill. Whereas Green Arrow is like, look, I'm gonna shoot an arrow through your chest. If you die, you die. You were shooting bullets at me, so all's fair, right? And that sort of it's sort of, it's the lethal non-lethal aspect of the bow and arrow that I think that they're running with, so that they can get away with him shooting a bunch of people in a TV show that's on at 8 o'clock at night on a Wednesday,
because they don't die right away.
But it's still brutal, right? He's still a very harsh superhero, almost bordering on anti-hero. If we almost didn't have bordering, the motivation for
him. I guess so. That's true. Did I bring in that gold nugget about the idea that an arrow is an offensive weapon? Did I say that during the podcast or previously in our conversation?
I'm pretty sure you did. If not, you have now.
I have. It's good. This idea. I don't know. I think it's great, and I really, I'm glad to see that follow through to the second episode, that they really are honoring this idea that he is, like, a vigilante and his methods are contrary, and they have this nice parallel storyline. So I think that they really have the basis for these stories down, and I think that they have a direction that they're going. They obviously are setting up a lot of things for us. I hope they follow through with them. I'm really looking forward to see where it goes. Very impressed so far. Like, I mean, we came into this knowing it was going to be sort of this big show, and I mean, sometimes you get this hype that sort of makes you oblivious to the show itself. But I think really talking about the show, if you are ever worried about the show yourself, sit down and talk about it for an hour. It's really helpful.
The thing is that just know, listeners, that as we go through these episodes, we're going to pick out stuff to talk about. And a lot of the time that stuff is going to be the things that we're either confused by or don't make sense. The plot holes and the flaws are going to be a little bit more glaring because we watch it a second time and all that sort of thing. And that's what we're doing. We're trying to get a little bit deeper for you guys than just this is what happened in the episode. So a lot of the time it's going to be conversation about what's going on with that? How come that doesn't jive with this? How come these two things don't sync up? How come they're not doing this with the character? That's what we'd really like to see. That doesn't mean that we're being negative on the show.
No, not at all.
We want to, I think the word we've used a lot is consistency, and it's a level of consistency. And when stuff's awesome, we're going to point out awesome stuff. I don't know that this episode particularly had anything that jumped out as incredibly awesome. There was the one moment with Diggle where he had his fight scene with China White. Is that her name? White. That just doesn't feel right, but okay. I'll accept that that's the character's name. Because that was a wicked scene, and we got to see a lot about that character that we didn't necessarily have confirmation on yet until that moment, which is that
he can
hold his own, right? You know, when we see that cool stuff, we're going to point it out, but the majority of the episode's going to be us going, like, that doesn't make any sense.
What's going on? Right? No, it's good. I like talking about it. It makes me have a deeper appreciation for the show and think about it on another level, which is great, and really, really sort of sink in. So
if you agree with us, that's cool. We want to hear all about that. If you disagree with us, we also want to hear all about that, because this is about a conversation. And at some point, Amanda and I are not going to agree on something, and that's when the show's going to get interesting.
I feel like some readers are probably being like, don't you guys already disagree on things? It's like, no, you just wait.
Yeah,
it's
you just wait until we disagree.
And send us some reading material, this idea, like this like year one. If there's stuff that we're missing, I mean, we are coming at it through multiple other shows, not just from Green Arrow, so there are probably gaps in our knowledge that we'd love to fill in. This is a great character. We want to know as much as we can about him. So anything that you can suggest, send us, you were saying our email before, mail@quiverpodcast.com.
You can also head over to the site, quiverpodcast.com. You can leave comments on the episodes, which is always a great way of giving us feedback, and then we know exactly what you're referring to. Because it's right on the episode there. And
start some arguments in our comment thread. I love that. It's like my favorite part of any website.
And jump on Facebook, on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/quiverpodcast, or shoot us a tweet at twitter.com/quiverpodcast. And like, we want the conversation to be more than just the two of us. We want to bring you guys into it as well. But you got to get out there and send us your thoughts. So don't be shy. We'll listen to anything you have to say, as long as it's not ridiculous.
By listen to, we mean read once, and if it's interesting, we'll read it again and respond to it. Yes. It's good. Yeah. We'll listen to it.
So, so that's all of our contact stuff. So thanks for listening to our second episode of Quiver.
Again, I'm Amanda Konkin. Thank you.
I'm Michael Cohen.
And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening.